Can you see that it's running?
It looks like it's on pause.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it's best to keep it on lock.
Yes.
So long as it keeps ticking over.
Who's recording us?
Okay. I left my camera. So I have to turn on the
video. Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Good morning to everyone, and welcome. We really appreciate the attendance. I'll just outline the program so that all of us know who is here, but I have noticed the department, the public service commissioner, has already arrived, and welcome. I have to start with the introduction. My name is Joyce Mulemaropa. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for Public Service and Administration. I really want to welcome everyone to the fourth Parliament. All of you know, it's not long that we started, and we are starting, you know, on a very tight footing. When we learn to know one another, you know, and get familiar with, you know, our act, we also have to do some tasks. All of you know that we are currently in the phase of budget phase, where all of doing the briefing, the understanding of one another, but at the same time, we definitely have to move into the work of the budget team. And I'm sure we are all appreciated, and we know that our budget is supposed to be on the 30th of July. So definitely we do have a tight time. I'll just take you through the program. And my opinion is that because we are all new, I'm sure it's just good for us to just know who's committee member, and then who's department, who's public service commission. That will really help. I hope you don't mind that even explain, but I would really want us to just get to know one another. Can we have this starting from the side?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Avery Williams. I'm deployed as a committee member on the African National Congress.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Brahim Suleiman. I heard only now that I'm a member of this committee, and finally heard I'm the good of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair. I'm Inathan Scoffrey. I'm from the Democratic Alliance, and I'm a new member.
My name is Anshin Dreyer, member of the Democratic Alliance, a new member of this committee. And I just want to make a correction to the previous member state of being a whip of this committee. I just have to point out that you look of the 18 members in this committee, not of all the committee members.
Good morning, Madam Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity. My name is Linda Innsmore. I represent the Congress of the People on this committee, and I welcome the opportunity to work and oversee the committee from co-perspective. Thank you very much.
My name is Johanna Mude Maluleke. I'm the African National Congress.
Thank you, Chairperson.
My name is
Ben Sopcho.
My
name
is John.
Today is on
still on.
Hello, my name is Lake. Oh,
thank you. My name is Yomi Tiaga. I'm a co-president.
Today I'm Admiral Simpson, I'm of the Office of the Public Service Commission.
Hi, I'm Odette Ramsing, I'm the Director General of the Office of the Public Service Commission.
My name is Stan Longweni, I am the Chairperson of the Public Service Commission. And since we are addressing you, Madam Chair and colleagues, for the first time, I'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate you on the committee and also to commit the Commission and this office to full cooperation with you in the efforts to achieve the overall functions of this committee. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Selena Sitanengosi. I am the Commission.
Madam Chair, pleasure to be here this morning and to meet all the members of the committee, both new and old. I'm also a brand new member of this committee and a brand new deputy minister of the department. Thursday.
Morning, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Richard Levine from the Department of Public Service Administration. Thank you.
My name is
Sina
Honorable Mohali from here. Oh, okay. That's Honorable Mohali.
My name is Christina Mohali, and I'm from the Lady.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Mamaro Ganasera. I'm the Commissioner of the Public Service Commission.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is David Murovese.
Thanks to everyone. It's better now we maybe move from it if we know one another better. And welcome to the community minister as well, welcome Commissioner, hello people. Oh yes, I think there's a member who just came in. I don't remember, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, Ibrahim Matsu, representing the agency.
Thank you. Okay. So, member, all of us, we are going to be really working together and we will see one another quite often with all the tasks that are facing us and the challenges, you know, to actually transform this country. So, I'll just outline the program and indicate the proceedings for the day. We're definitely going to have much of the briefings, like I indicated earlier on. As much as the briefings, but also, you know, how are we going to focus on our budget goals. And the briefings will be on two areas. And of course, I'll take the opportunity as the last item to just update you on the Public Service Commission. In terms of the first briefing, it will be a briefing by the Department of Public Sector Administration, and they will be briefing us on the strategic plan and budget vote number 9. The second briefing will be by the Public Service Commission, and they will be briefing us again on the strategic plan and the budget vote, which is vote number 10. And then we'll end up with that update. It's just a very brief update so that all of us together just have a low in terms of the budget and how it's going. So, of course, the Secretary was just saying that maybe we start with the PSC because they are already ready and organized. And I think maybe we can accept that. And you know, in the light that the department did not submit the response, the strategic plan, and of course now that report has not been sort of stable, we are actually starting at a nil you know, of footing. And I hope we definitely will help to correct them. And on the other side, we are coming into this number without a report. But nonetheless, if the department allows or the I think we can take the public status commissioner. Because I believe that the report is just on the way to have some while we were making the presentation, we will ultimately receive the report. If the public service commission is ready, I will then let the chair then start.
Thank you very much, Chair. I am grateful for this opportunity to present our budget plan. So, to perceive that with the role of the Public Service Commission is to place that strategic plan in context. Without any further ado, I think I will ask the Director General of that country to make the presentation.
Thank you, Prof. and to the honourable members. We thought that because it's our first presentation to the new portfolio committee, that we actually give an indication of the role of the Public Service Commission as well, so people have an overall understanding of what we do in terms of the Public Service Commission. So the Public Service Commission is mandated by the Constitution to, amongst other things, promote sound values and principles of public administration, and also to propose measures to ensure effective and efficient performance of the public service overall. Notwithstanding its independence, the Public Service Commission does seek to play a developmental role by ensuring that its programs support government initiatives and all with the aim to strengthen service delivery. To this end, we see as our strategic obligation as a generation of evidence to enable Parliament and committees like yourself to exercise its oversight role, but at the same time, we also advise the executive on good administrative practice, because we seek to promote excellence in public administration. What we intend to do with this presentation is really take you through the legislative mandate of the Public Service Commission, give you an idea of our structure, as well as our organizational structure of the Office of the Public Service Commission, highlight some key performance areas, as well as key achievements that we've achieved, look at the MTF estimates per program, as well as according to the economic classification, and then possibly pause and discuss some of our contextual challenges as an independent institution. We derive our mandate from sections 195 and 196 of the Constitution, and section 195 sets out the values and principles that must govern public administration in South Africa, and these are the values and principles that the Public Service Commission should promote. And these are a high standard of professional ethics, efficient economic and effective use of resources, a development-orientated public administration, that provision of services must be done in an impartial, fair, and equitable way and without bias. There's the need to respond to people's needs and encourage the public to participate in policy making. Accountable public administration, fostering transparency, the cultivation of good human resource management and career development practices, as well as ensuring that a representative public administration is within the public service in respect of employment and personnel management practices must be based on ability, objectivity, fairness, and of course the need to redress the imbalances of the past. In terms of section 1964 of the Constitution, as I said earlier, we promote the constitutional values and principles that I've outlined. We also investigate, monitor, and evaluate the organization, administration, and personnel practices of the public service. We propose measures to ensure effective and efficient performance. We also give directives aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures, so those procedures such as recruitment, transfer, promotions, and dismissals, they must comply with the basic values and principles set out in section 195. And we must report on our activities to the National Assembly as well as to provincial legislatures in respect of activities in the provinces. Either of our own accord or on receipt of a complaint, we investigate the application of personnel and public administration practices. We investigate grievances of employees in the public service and recommend remedies. We monitor and investigate adherence to applicable procedures in the public service. And as I said, we advise national and provincial organs of state regarding personnel practices in the public service. If you look at the structure of the Public Service Commission, we have 14 commissioners with one public service commission, but 14 commissioners, 9 members are from provinces, which are nominated by the premier, and 5 members, apologies for the approved, it's not approved, it's actually nominated by the National Assembly. And ultimately, all 14 members are appointed by the President of the country. We have, in terms of our organizational structure, we have one head office. That head office is situated in Pretoria. And in each province, we have a regional office in each province. And these regional offices are fairly small for the kind of work that they're expected to do. In fact, they're limited to 6 officials per regional office. And if you take note of the fact that most of public service actually happens at provinces, and the small office that we actually have in these provinces, they're just not big enough in order to respond effectively the kind of needs that are based in the provinces. And I think this is something that this committee should show particular interest in relation to that kind of structuring. Because for some time now, there has been a limit in terms of the extent to which we've been able to grow these particular offices. Of course, with the budgetary constraints as well. In terms of a new organizational structure, this was implemented with effect from 1st of April 2008. The Public Service Commission has a secretariat, which is the Office of the Public Service Commission. The Office of the Public Service Commission was also a department in terms of Schedule 1 of the Public Service Act. So the OPSC is headed by Director General, who is the accounting officer, and we have four branches. We have a branch leadership and management practices, monitoring and evaluation, investigations and anti-corruption, and corporate services. We have a fairly small staff complement of 234. Once again, if you think that we are assisting your oversight and we must cover public service, cover all the departments across the public service, talking about 1.3 million, million public servants, and you're actually looking at an office of 234. So we're really stretching, we stretch to the limits, but I think if you look at our size and what we've been able to do in terms of the quality and the quantity of what we've been able to do, I think you will be impressed with time in terms of our performance over the years and given the kind of limitations on our resources, both financial and human. The PSC has, we've operationalized our mandate around six key performance areas. We think, and this we think is the way in which we could support and assist public service in South Africa. We've looked at the area of leadership and human resource reviews. We think labor relations improvement must be an area that is given attention. Of course, governance monitoring and evaluation, service delivery and compliance evaluations, public administration investigations, and most definitely professional ethics within the public service. If you look in terms of the area of leadership and human resource reviews, we've tried to contribute towards this area or strengthening this area through the implementation of the framework for the evaluation of heads of departments, providing advice on the quality of the performance agreements, and reporting compliance trends to key stakeholders. What you will realize, and with time, because we will come to you quite often around the challenges in relation to evaluating the heads of departments. That is really the evaluations of directors general as well as heads of departments in provinces. The Public Service Commission has developed a framework, and that framework is actually used to evaluate the performance of individual directors general and heads of departments. And I think we may, Madam Chair, have an opportunity to perhaps take you through that framework at some time so you get an idea how that framework is actually applied in practice in relation to these evaluations. We are currently revising our approach to the HOD evaluation because we want to make it more effective. So even hopefully when we come and present the framework to you, it will definitely be a more revised and refined framework because through the years we've seen the challenges and we've realized we actually need to tweak the system to actually give us better results in relation to individual performance. Another challenge we realized that it's no good just evaluating the performance of the individual head of department. You need to also understand what is actually happening within that department. So there's a need to align individual as well as organizational performance. And hopefully the new instrument will respond to all those kind of new approaches. We also oversee the effectiveness of human resource management in the public service because I think this is one of the biggest challenges, if I may say, through my years in the public service. I think the ability to manage human resources remains one of the biggest transformation challenges within our public service. And what the Public Service Commission has done has developed instruments and toolkits which we hope actually assist departments to improve their internal implementation of human resource management practices. Some of our key outputs, and you'll notice these will all be reports that you will find on our website. We've also got hard copies, Madam Chair, we'd be more than willing to actually do a package of all our reports to distribute to all the new members. But I think I've just given you an indication of some of the research reports we've done. We've analyzed payments of performance incentives to HODs without annual performance reviews conducted. That was one of the challenges that came through, or the allegations or the perceptions in public, was that directors generals and heads of department were actually receiving cash bonuses, performance bonuses, without actually reviews being undertaken. I think our report said categorically that was not the situation in relation to that administrative leadership. I think what was happening below in departments, there were certain problems which we highlighted in reports. The quality of key performance agreements and their compliance with requirements in the Northwest province. I think we're trying to look at the quality of performance agreements across the public service. Because of our limited resources, we'd like to cover all provinces in 1 year. Unfortunately, that's just not possible. So what we have to do is actually choose a province per year. And that's what we've tried to do in relation to improving the performance agreements, or the way these performance agreements are compiled. We also look at strategic issues emanating from the evaluation of heads of department, and I think a particularly relevant and pertinent issue has been our report on the turnover rate of HODs and its implications for the public service. And I think that report was saying in any transition period, your administrative leadership, actually there is fair levels of uncertainty around what actually happens, and that does to some degree then impact on service delivery, because of almost the sense of uncertainty that prevails at that particular level. So I think this will be a very interesting report with which to engage with. We've also continuously over the years looked at the reasons for the inability of the public service to recruit and retain persons with disabilities. We've said that the national target of 2% is definitely achievable. We've had disability hearings with managers to try and understand what are those limitations. And I think all managers were very clear that it is achievable to get that 2%. But there were some serious challenges in relation to how they actually go about recruiting this group of persons. We've also looked at it, and we've evaluated the training needs of senior managers in the public service, and asked the question as to whether the training out there is actually adequate or responding to kind of the practical requirements that a manager needs. If you look at the labor relations improvement, we see ourselves as the chief arbiter of grievance resolutions in the public service. So any public servant who is dissatisfied must first go through the internal processes. If they're unhappy by the outcome of that internal process, they then can come to the Public Service Commission to actually look into that grievance. The Public Service Commission, in turn, will look into it and then advise the executive authority as to the outcome. But at the end of the day, it's still up to the EA to decide whether or not to take that advice. But it's our responsibility to come back to Parliament and report over the year what really happened in relation to the recommendations we've given. As you've seen, grievances in the public service have continually risen through the years, or those grievances that have been referred to the Public Service Commission. And you've got to ask yourself the question, are our public servants becoming more dissatisfied, or alternatively, are public servants becoming more aware of their rights and therefore using the access mechanisms that are available to them? I'm not sure I could answer categorically either yes or no to either of those questions. If you look in the area of governance monitoring and evaluation, we have put in place a monitoring and evaluation system which undertakes specific commissioned evaluations to establish the level of compliance with values and principles of public administration. Our monitoring and evaluation system is actually based on the 9 principles I've spoken to earlier. And what we try and do each year, yet again, we can't cover all 134 departments. Each year we choose a sample of about 24 to 30 departments, and we apply the M&E system to these departments, and we actually then evaluate to what extent they are adhering to the values and the constitutional values and principles in respect of public administration. And I think this work really generates critical analysis and insights which the legislatures can use to assess the performance of the executive and to hold them accountable. I think these reports are useful not only for this portfolio committee, but Madam Chair, I think they could also be useful for other portfolio committees, and maybe there should be a way in which this portfolio committee facilitates those reports to other committees. On an annual basis, we come up with what we call the State of the Public Service Report, the acronym there, SOPS, The state of the public service report using the 9 principles are spoken to actually comments in terms of what is the state of public service in South Africa for a given year. Each year, we've also now adopted an approach where we actually pick up a theme in relation to our state of the public service report. The one that we've just finished, the 2009 one, actually dealt with the readiness of the public service to respond to the challenges for 2010. And I think that was a state of the public service report that the committee may want to engage with. I think in this area, what has been of particular interest for us is really the area also around poverty eradication and poverty reduction. And what we try to do is actually evaluate poverty programs and poverty activities and see to what extent are we responding, or is the public service responding to this critical area. If you look in the area of service delivery and quality assurance, Madam Chair, I'm going very quickly through these areas because I think all these reports, as I said, they are actually available on the website, and we would be more than willing to come and make a presentation on a particular theme if that's what the portfolio committee would want. We recognize that Bartopelli is the central policy framework for transforming public service, and what we've tried to conduct is a series of evaluations on the implementation of the individual principles of Bartopelli. I think nobody can deny that it's a good policy, but the extent to which it's been inculcated in public servants, I think therein is the challenge, and the extent of implementation is a challenge, and all the reports that we've done in this area has said that we have serious implementation challenges around the Bartopelli policy. One of the mechanisms that the Public Service Commission also uses to look at service delivery is what we call our program of inspections. What these inspections do is our commissioners actually go out on site and observe what is actually happening in relation to a particular area. If it's, for example, schools, they will go into the schools and see what is happening in terms of timekeeping, in terms of the kind of document, teaching material, etc. So it's really on-site inspections to give some observations and hopefully also some quick feedback to departments in relation to which areas they need to attend to. Because many of our other reports or research reports take some time to do, because it's about a 6 month to a year research, whereas these inspections actually our commissioners are able to observe very quickly and then give feedback to a particular school or particular clinic in relation to improvement. We also conduct citizen satisfaction surveys. For us, it's not only important to look at what the department is doing internally to improve service delivery. We need to get an idea of what the citizens are feeling about that service that is being delivered. So many of our reports have also responded to the citizen perspective, if you will. And there's some interesting insights that come through these surveys. For example, when we did a survey into the whole situation of police services in the country, 64% of the people we surveyed said that they were actually very happy with the police service. And they were very happy with the service delivery at police stations. And that's why continuously we got to refine our methodology. Because when we went back to try and understand how are we getting that particular result, we actually realized that the people we had surveyed were people that had just come out of the police station. We were actually that got the identity document, Commission of Oath, was assigned. So those were the people that were coming out with such a high satisfaction rate. And so we needed to realize that also in terms of how we categorize that citizen, we need to ensure we cover all aspects of the kind of service that they're going for. And that's why you have such a high rate in terms of your service, your citizen satisfaction around the police service. If you look at public administration investigations, what we do in this area, we have two access mechanisms. We have the complaints rules, and we have the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. The Public Service Commission manages that anti-corruption hotline, and we receive then complaints from both the public and within the public service, and we receive complaints from a wide range of people. We receive complaints that we needed to investigate from political parties, we receive from executive authorities that have invited us in to investigate, from public servants, from the public themselves, And really, in terms of these kind of mechanisms, the real credibility of these kind of mechanisms is the extent of feedback and response. Because you don't want, as a public member out there, to support the crime effort or to support the anti-corruption effort, to report an alleged corrupt act and find out months down the line nothing has really been done. And the reality is that we do not have sufficient investigative capacity. Not only in relation to the Public Service Commission, because it's not our intention necessarily to investigate every complaint. We cannot do that. What we try and do in the National Anti-Corruption Hotline is to refer these complaints to departments. But then the departments also don't have the investigative capacity to actually investigate these cases. And you find that disappointingly, out of about 5,000 corruption cases or alleged corrupt acts that have been reported to our anti-corruption hotline since 2004, your feedback rate is something like 26%, 30%. That actually then starts undermining a mechanism of this nature. And really, you know, and until such time as the right amount of resources are directed to this particular area, I think the hotlines such as the National Anti-Corruption Hotline, no matter how well they may be managed, unless they're actually ensuring that those investigations happen, you're not going to get the kind of support you want from the public. What we've also done is research in this particular area to try and understand the risk assessment or the risk profiles in relation to why you get some of the kind of maladministration, corrupt activities that we read about. And what we do on an annual basis, we actually track financial misconduct in the public service. So on an annual basis, we come out with a report on financial misconduct, and in that report, we're able to say how many public servants actually misconducted themselves during that annual year, what has been the cost of that misconduct, and what kind of actions have been taken against those kind of employees. And I think we're the only institution that actually does this tracking year on, and we've been doing it now since 2001, and I think it's been interesting the kind of trends that have come through. We've also come to the conclusion that in terms of public finances, if I'm going to use public finances effectively and efficiently, surely the way I use my personal finances has some kind of implication on the way in which I will use public finances. So what we did is actually look at public servants' private finances, and we looked at the extent of indebtedness of public servants. And I think those results were really concerning, because you were sitting with even managers, your senior management servants, where they were in serious debt, and they are responsible for large amounts of public money. And you can well imagine when you're in that kind of financial stress, the temptations then are much more likely to happen. I'm not saying anybody in debt is likely to dip into the public coffers, but I'm saying there is a vulnerability in those kind of areas. And the public service, I believe, or we believe, has a responsibility to assist public servants to manage their own finances as well. It's through the employee wellness program, through debt counseling. I think as an employer, the public service should look at these aspects, and I know all looking into these issues. In terms of professional ethics, I've spoken to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline. In fact, the cases are 6,578 corruption cases that have been received to date since its implementation in 2004. I think this committee really needs to look seriously at the issue of the lack of investigative capacity and how you actually urge the executive in a way that it actually directs resources in this particular area. Because I think all the verbal commitment to fight corruption will be undermined if we don't actually do something much more drastic in relation to how we respond to this area. We've got what you call the National Anti-Corruption Forum. The National Anti-Corruption Forum is a cross-sectoral forum where you've got sectors from business, from the NGO, as well as from public, coming together in a collaborative effort to fight corruption. And the Public Service Commission is actually the secretariat of this forum. And this forum, you would, the most recent activity of this forum was the third National Anti-Corruption Summit, which took place last year and which you may have read about. We also manage the financial disclosure framework of senior managers in the public service. Now, the financial disclosure framework is really a framework that is aimed to improve transparency and accountability of senior managers. So on an annual basis, senior managers are expected to fill in this form, and the Public Service Commission then manages it. The sad reality is that since its inception, we have never received 100% of these forms. And you also got to accept that these forms are supposed to go through the EA. And the EA, the Executive Authority, is supposed to submit those forms to the Public Service Commission. So, you know, you have to ask then, you know. I mean, the question is, to what extent is the Executive Authority complying with their responsibility in relation to this? And we have not, as I said, received 100% in relation to these forms. And if you think 1,279 forms are outstanding, there's 1,279 senior managers that have failed to submit, and you've got to ask, why is the reticence, why is the reluctance? Are they perhaps hiding something, and that's why they do not want to disclose? Or is it just a refusal or a failure to adhere to a public administration regulation? Because the regulations is very clear. If you do not submit, the executing authority to take action against that senior manager. But to date, from what we know, there has not been any action taken against these senior managers. And there are repeated offenders in relation to this. So you're having the same set of senior managers not actually submitting these forms. And I think these are issues that this committee may want to look at and possibly call the senior managers, together with the EA, to account for this non-submission of these financial disclosures. We also moved into the region and tried to assist and support our counterparts within the region. And the Public Service Commission has played a pivotal role in the establishment and the launch of what we call the African Public Services Commission. The really objective of these commissions is to form a body in Africa where these commissions share information and also promote good governance across the continent. Professor Sangweni was the first president of the association. He's been appointed president of the association, and the Office of the Public Service Commission is the secretariat. We've also done some work with Southern Sudan Civil Service Commission in terms of assisting them in developing in establishing the commission. Now, Madam Chair, we actually move to the expenditure estimates per program and our MTF estimates. I think the figures, if you can see the extent of our mandate, and if you look at the kind of finances that we're actually receiving to support that mandate, clearly there's a disjuncture. You can't have a mandate as big as ours and expect to actually effectively carry it out in all areas with the kind of resources that are now available to us. So by this year, it's 121,251,000. Next year, 132. So you can see the increases are really incremental. And in most cases, those increases only actually respond to the increases in the salaries of personnel. They never ever increases that actually respond to our goods and services item, where we can improve our research or increase our research. It's really increases that really just respond to the personnel budget. And that's why, you know, with that kind of incremental increase, the chances of increasing our regional offices become very, very limiting. If you look at our compensation for employees, that's obviously the biggest part of our budget, over 75%, and not surprisingly, we are a labor-intensive organization. Our human resources is there to do the kind of research that we want, etc. Our goods and services budget, in comparison, is just under 30 million. And I think what is the more shocking thing, that 121 has already been eaten into. that that was the reduction in the Public Service Commission's budget over the MTEF as instructed by Treasury. So already, Madam Chair, we've got about 3.5 million taken off that budget. And most, in most places, where does that 3.5 million come from? It comes from your item on goods and services, which actually should be driving your key performance areas. Because it definitely can't come off your compensation of employees, because your warm bodies are already there. We have tried to engage both the Minister for Public Service and Administration, as well as National Treasury, on the reduction in our budgets. And unfortunately, we have not been successful in relation to preventing those kind of reductions. Of course, you know, we all know about the economic downturn, and we know that there needs to be belt tightening. But it makes a big difference if you're sitting with a department that's got 6 billion, or if you're sitting with a department that's got only 121 million. So the minute you have a reduction of 3 to 4 million, the impact in terms of that budget is really is an enormous negative impact on the budget. But we have tried to manage it as best we can. We've considered freezing the filling of critical posts, because the point is we're not going to afford them. We try to have stricter application around our performance management and development system, and therefore have been much more tighter in relation to merit and cash awards, which becomes really difficult because you're asking a small number of people to do a large amount of work, and you're continuously asking them to work overtime, unpaid overtime, work very long under much stress, because it's a highly pressurized institution. And then at the end of the year, you say, well, we can't actually recognize that kind of commitment because we've got nothing within our budget to recognize that commitment. So it becomes a vicious cycle. So you've got continually stressed, almost unhappy employees, and you're not able to say, you know, thank you for the job well done. And if you look in terms of the volume of work, it is definitely a job well done. But you've got a limited number of people to actually reward because of your budget. We've reduced projects on our work plan. You will find that as an institution in a given year, we would have done about 30 research projects. In this year, we would be lucky if we even get away with 10 research projects in relation to the reduction of our budget. We've limited outsourcing in respect of projects. In fact, this year, we will not take on a service provider to assist around our research work, which is always very useful in some cases, because the need to keep abreast of the kind of international trends helps when you have some outside perspective in relation to these research aspects. So what are our contextual challenges? Clearly, I think I've talked, every comment I've tried to insert our budgetary constraints. If anything, I hope that I will leave you here this morning with the view that the Public Service Commission is definitely under budgeted and has serious restrictions in that area. It's also likely with the single public service legislation, when that single public service becomes operational, that the Public Service Commission's mandate is going to have to extend to local government. Already, if you see the kind of challenges we're facing, it is going to stretch the resources even further. We've also continuously requested to undertake interventions into departments. Most recently, we were in the Department of Home Affairs. We've done interventions in the Department of Land Affairs, and really always with hoping to assist the processes there. I've spoken in relation to our regional integration work. We've also, I think, established ourselves as a leader in the promotion of professional ethics, but as I said, without the sufficient investigative capacity, I think we're going to undermine our role in this area. What we've done is to try and increase the number of investigations. We've actually reduced our approach to a desktop investigation rather than a full-scale investigation. With that kind of approach, we cover more investigations, but obviously not as comprehensive as we would like, as a full-scale investigation would do. We've also, we believe, pioneered monitoring and evaluation in the public service. We have a very functional transversal monitoring and evaluation system. However, the limit on the number of departments to which the system is applied to on an annual basis, I think, is restricting and does impact then on the state of the public service report. we are viewing, as I said, around the weaker economic conditions, and in response to these economic circumstances, government departments have had to reduce the baseline allocation of departments, including the PSC. But we want to submit that this reduction comes at a time when the organization is already facing serious resource constraints. The scope and depth of the PSC's oversight work will definitely be impacted on negatively. We've also positioned ourselves as a technical oversight body whose products and services we hope support Parliament and the provincial legislature in the fulfillment of its political oversight. And as a consequence of this, greater demands are being made on the PSC by parliamentary committees for independent assessment of certain public administration practices. We've also had an interaction with the chairs of parliamentary committees, which was facilitated by the then chair of chairs, and it became very clear during this interaction that more committees will expect us to do work for them, or more committees will rely on the kind of research we do. In terms of supporting monitoring and evaluation institutions, as part of reorganizing the structure of government, President Zuma appointed a minister in the presidency responsible for performance monitoring and evaluation. And the overarching purpose of this ministry will be to track the performance of government and to provide timely advice to the executive regarding areas that need intervention. Very similar to what the Public Service Commission does, but obviously the Public Service Commission does it from an independent perspective with Parliament as its client. We believe that this development brings with it important opportunities for raising the bar in M&E and for strengthening accountability for performance, and as a Public Service Commission, we definitely welcome this initiative. However, it is important to ensure that overlaps between the work of this unit and the work of the PSC are obviated. The possibility can also not be ruled out that the new unit takes off. It may need to collaborate with the PSC in relation to some to M&E products. So, Madam Chair, it's really to say that as a Public Service Commission, we've had an exemplary management of our financial resources. You may say, well, it's because it's such a small amount of finances we need to manage. But for the last 7 years, we've had unqualified reports. In last year, our report was so squeaky clean that there wasn't even an issue that the Auditor General had raised on even an administrative practice. And we're expecting that this year it will be very much the same. Our budget is, we also, our underspending is so limited that last year we were able to only hand back to the Treasury something like 17,000 rand. So it shows you to what, how tightly that budget is managed next year, and it also gives our hope an indication of our planning in relation to our budget. And we really look forward to assisting this portfolio committee to strengthen its oversight over departments and over the public service. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I think it's a worthwhile and quite intense listening to the area that we're looking into. Interacting with the documents is something else that is also presented to therefore amplify some of the areas that we're maybe let's get into questions before we move to the next presentation. And the report is already distributed, and all of you have finished, and can be able to proceed to the next. But let's take the questions. I won't allocate too much time for the questions, most of all, we need particularly the presentations that are quite critical for us to get as much information as possible.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Father from saying thank you very much to the Director for the excellent presentation. I think it's been a pleasure to work with the Public Service Commission been doing, and so today with this kind of resource that we need. And I certainly have a lot of sympathy with your budgetary constraints, small staff, few members, and I think we as a committee will probably discuss this and see, you know, who can pressurize, you know, Rhea and Fresh. But for us to discuss later, I can't commit the committee to that. I have one or two things that I want to ask. The complaints that you received
15% were outstanding when you see that no action ever taken, and that's often the last of our 3%, and that's quite worrying to me. I understand you can't do anything about that, but it's obviously for the director generals of the various departments that they have to do something. And I assume, and I didn't mean to be controversial on this matter, that they're aware of it, that you extended or reported to them about the senior managers in the department, and they've not reported you still away, so they're unaware of that. Coming back to my second question is, coming back to your other, to the type budget you have, maybe, do you only get money from the treasury, or are there other sources of income, independent sources of income from other bodies, possibly overseas donors or anything like that? And do you charge departments for what's done in a specific department? I'm thinking of the Auditor General, who sends an account to departments for the auditing done in that department. Is there something similar, or do you? That's my other question. And then last thing, I'm going to tell you something that didn't come up in the presentation, but it's an item that I read, something that I read in your annual report. It's the ending of the term of certain commissioners, and that you needed to appoint new commissioners. And clearly we need to make sure that there's no lack of time between, you know, when people retire, and that we need the time to appoint a new commission. Maybe you could have comment on the progress in that. Thanks.
Okay. I refer the honourable member to introduce themselves, setting with yourself on our own stuff.
Thank you very much. If I was on just a few quick questions. In relation to slide 9 on page 5, I'm just thinking just from experience, are we fooling ourselves when we say that 15% disability represents the figure is achievable? Is it not? Rather than the public service defeating the mantra that it is achievable and after 15 years it's not been achieved, is it not time for a substantive investigation into what that segment of the human resource market is like, and therefore to recalibrate our expectations with regard to representativity at that level? I just think that the public service may do us a disservice if it repeats the mantra that it's achievable, because then it says that there's mischief in the employment practices. So I just thought that is the first question. The second one, I think, is in relation to slide 12 on page 6. I think it would not be useful if the public service in the customer or citizen satisfaction survey does not distinguish at least between three types of people who need to be surveyed. I think the one is citizens, the other is client-based or customers or users of the services, and the other is lobby groups. And I suspect that the surprise that you're finding is because you may have a high dissatisfaction level from lobby groups, a moderate dissatisfaction level from citizens, and a satisfaction level from users. And I think that if you don't start to sharpen your instruments, the Public Service Commission and all of us may be guilty of perpetuating this around the efficiency and effectiveness of our services. The other one I want to ask, I think, leads on to Honourable Andrea, and that is about, rather than, because I know that departments and governments outsource a lot of human resource information and investigations and corruption investigations and all of those kind of things to private sector, whereas I think that if one were to say what are the niche areas of the Public Service Commission that could be insourced by departments and by governments as a way, like the Auditor General, of generating some funds rather than do the kind of charades that I think one sees that passes for investigations and that has enormous implications for people. And the last question, Chairperson, is the emerging Department of Monitoring and Evaluation as opposed to to the Public Service Commission. Now, the only differential that I think that you've made between the two is the independence of the Public Service Commission. I see it's a 19.8 million item on your budget. Is this not the time that the public service rethinks its mandate with the hand and feet capacity and the eyes and ears capacity being developed in government? Should you not shed a lot of the expertise that you do have in doing to the emerging department and set up a super evaluatory capacity in the Public Service Commission that is able to evaluate the work that is being done by this department so that you take a supervisory role as opposed to a kind of hands and feet role on that area and reorient your budget in a different way as opposed to asking for more money. And I think that to take the lead and to redefine the relationship rather than, in a sense, become less relevant as time goes on. Those are the questions that came to me as she spoke. Thank you very much to the Public Service Commission and Professor Hanwin.
Okay.
Oh,
we'll take the last question from
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. I'd also like to thank the Director General. Can I request that the council Thank you very much, Director. Thank you for the effort that you put in. I think it's very important as a new member of the committee to have had this oversight information. But I think it's also important to note that I would be deeply concerned if the Auditor General had not taken up some of the issues around these 279 outstanding human resources. In fact, I say it's an accountability and a performance issue. But the heads of department are not actually submitting a regulatory document that is required to put them, keep them in office. So I think that is also quite key. But additionally, there are some deep concerns around the changing of the heads of department from a service delivery perspective. And I do think it is very key for us as a committee to look at how that is managed going forward and how we can actually provide insight on how to better manage the issues within the department. And I think the department has to start to take responsibility and accountability for not providing the correct information back to the public service committee for them to be able to do their own time. So thank you very much, Madam Director General, and I do appreciate and I look forward to keeping you on. Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, I think it will take a response from the PSC. It is not related to the department. While the department is making the presentation, they will just touch on them. And you can respond with errors, actually, on your side.
Thank you, Chair. I would deal with some of the questions and my colleagues will also come in here in some of the areas that are important to the PT. I would like to take the part of the question that raised by under the Chair. The particular question on the end of term of the new commissioner, which I think is quite an ancient matter as we speak here today, because if you look at the slide, it is slide number 6, which shows the various commissions, part of the structure of the commission. As we speak today, at the national level, you might be obviously aware of this, there are two positions which are due vacant as of the end of June. I believe you are presently pleased, Madam Chair, with this process, which, as I understand, requires your input in terms of making the selection as required by the Public Service Commission Act, and the selection making a recommendation for the speaker who will then award this nomination to the president who will make the appointment. The issue of concern here is the time constraint. Here we are on the matter half of June. These positions are due at the end of June. But very critical in that, that includes the position of the chair, position which I presently hold. And this does say if there is no appointment of the chair by the end of June, we may find that the commission is in more or less the same position as has been described of the and the commission is in fact to mention while on that that we have also had a vacant position for the deputy chair. The requirement of the constitution is that out of the five commissioners, well, let me hear what that. What happened in the constitution is that when the president has received the nomination from the various sources, that is that the National Assembly and the Provincial Administration, he then appoints out of those nominations, he appoints the commissioners, and he also proceeds to appoint the chair and deputy chair. And the effect is that these two positions reside into one. So what I'm saying with the chair is that as we stand today, the position of the deputy chair is not filled at the moment. The position of the chair is due for filling up at the end of June. At the level of the provinces, three provinces are also due for their nominations to the president and the president to appoint them. And these are Northwest. The position in Northwest became vacant last year, December, and it has not been filled up to this date. I hope that that also will be helpful as soon as possible. The position in this province, Western Cape, has also not been filled as far as I'm aware, and the position is overdue. The Limpopo position is also due by the end of June. For the end of June, I believe the premier and the provincial administration have taken action to fill, or are in the process of filling up the position. So let me go to the position, Madam Chair. With regard to the matter of sources of income, if you would add more detail on that, I just want to comment on the set of study. There is no provision, structural provision, for the Commission to make raise any study on whatever work or investigation it does for the department. I believe the federal is able to make raise studies for the federal standard because that is built into the structural instrument and the we cannot do that. We do, however, have access to the data that we've done. The matter of the slogan on later this to the CMI colleague, the question relating to the citizen section. I think the observation that the Honorable Ibrahim Rasool has made a very, very helpful the calculation of the citizens that you look at into in terms of treatment there, citizens, but also clients and other people and so on. We have not really because it's been that sort of question, but I think this is an interesting draft. I'm saying this because indeed we have three and some comments on some of our work. Comments that come from the of individuals, which I would say categorize as more categories of those groups. And when you read those comments, you still find a lot of difference in the
depends
on the fact. Yes, yeah. So, I think at first point, then I have to take that into consideration as we go in as we go on to the same thing then would go for the strategy on human resource situation to come up at this stage to the. The area of the disclosure framework, this is also a very tricky area. The regulatory framework under which these disclosures are made, this regulation which is under the Public Service Act, and that regulation provides that the senior management will submit these disclosures first and foremost to the minister, to the executive. It is therefore the duty and the function of the executive to ensure that these disclosures are made, because it is an execution of the regulatory that we obtain. The PG is part and parcel of the FMS, and I wouldn't really place the honor on him more than the minister has said, the minister. It is the minister who submits. And Public Service Commission, after doing the letter of scrutiny, does the process and depends on the minister's leading, the minister and the Public Service Commission that might issue in terms of making sure that this is done. It is indeed a matter of a disciplinary area in the event. The SMS official failed or otherwise are unable to respond to disclosure of the content required. I would encourage my letter to know if
was two different things. For example, it's not necessarily that
as the president will be looking into, among other quite a number of things that you're doing here. We're also going to be looking at monitoring economic trends, which is not necessarily a mandate. So I was saying, as the commission is then saying, we're impacted and say continuously do the conceptualization as to what it is that the monitoring and evaluation within the president would do all about. And therefore, it's only when government is very clear about that which it wants to evaluate and monitor, that we can come back and say, how do we let sit and say, how do we open for the first point of view. You know, the Minister of Finance, again, having said the world has established a division to deal with tender and greater issues within Russia. As was said here, the Public Service Commission has done a report in relation to the supply chain management. I just can't remember the level at which we're looking at how those kind of tenders were awarded. But the fact of the matter is, it is important that we do not talk past each other. But it is also important that we engage. So then say, if the PSC on the basis of its mandate and having to deal with issues related to its manager's staff, issues related to the supply chain management, we're still going to do that. How many big that pressure going to have in developing that kind of issue? That's one aspect that I think we should talk to. So I'm saying it's not something that you can sit and say, honorable Rasul, you can get a straightforward answer. It's something that we need to discuss about and say, of course, based on your experience, how far do you go?
I want to look at what's being said in your
especially this one you mentioned now, where 15% didn't do well. Where can I find it on the
website?
And then where do I look?
You just look on our front page, was like we need you to report, publish report of the PSC.
I look at published reports,
yeah.
And then what do you pick for?
It will be an overview on financial misconduct in the public service.
That's
one of the not financial misconduct, financial disclosure.
Financial disclosure. Yeah. Overview on financial disclosure. Yeah. Okay. Right, so it is available, and it's quite a new report.
Mm.
I mean, it's up till the 31st of March.
Yeah.
When was it?
We never I'm not sure if it's been tabled yet. I'm just
checking.
I'll just check. But you can call me or email me.
Will you be available tomorrow?
Oh, yeah, I'll be in my office tomorrow. Put it that way.
So you'll be in your office tomorrow. Okay, but I mean, you're not in Cape Town.
No, no, no. I'm leaving
as soon
as
you see
it. Okay, no problem.
Hard copies that members have does not have this change. It's just the statistics for the presentation purposes. No other changes that you need to make to the presentation. Okay. Who will be working on this over here? Will it be the DP?
But
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Sorry,
the Deputy Minister who is going to make a few introductory remarks before we call on the DG to lead the presentation on the meeting for the strategic framework. But let me say that on behalf of the Department and the Ministry, we are extremely appreciative of your comments that you've made earlier on this morning, in view of the lateness of the arrival of the documents. And we are happy to see that the committee is really forgiving, forgiving nature this morning. But I want to say, also having listened to the Public Service Commission, particularly commenting about the speed and urgency within which the committee has to replace the commissioner and appoint the chair, I was looking very carefully to the Honourable Mayor
Dreyer,
and she said, and somebody made the point that we don't want to be in the same position as the South African Broadcasting Corporation. And she was very brilliantly shaking her head and said, no, 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 yes, we don't want to be in that position. So I want to urge you to please attend to that matter urgently. I don't want to have the reputation that wherever I go, I might bring more trouble to them. Yeah, just joking on that one, but it's indeed a pleasure to be having the privilege to serve this department as the Deputy Minister. The department hasn't had a deputy minister. It's the first time that it has one, and we have the responsibility to create the machinery, of course, and to support the minister in leading the departments together with the DG. So I'm privileged to be here this morning and apologize to the minister if he didn't catch this meeting. And we need to say that, that clearly you will see in the medium-term strategic plan that will be outlined by the DG that this plan sits very squarely and in a very focused way within the medium-term strategic priorities that government has already outlined, which all of us would have got an insight into when we listened carefully to the President's State of the Nation address, in which the President outlined the five key priorities of government in this mandate term, which is, in the first instance, to fight unemployment, create jobs, to attend to improvements in health, education, focus on rural development, fight crime, and at the end of it all, to ensure that all of our work in this term is able to advance the strategic outcome that we seek, and that is to improve people's lives. And essential to that is the notion of fighting poverty, eradicating poverty, and making sure that our people have a decent and sustainable livelihood. Now, the debate in the Public Service Commission on resources is quite an instructive one, because to some extent it outlines the challenges that are before all of us in government in this sector when we have to seek to achieve these outcomes, give attention to the priorities we've identified, but in a very special and different historical conjuncture, conjuncture in which the challenge to deliver on these outcomes coincides with an economic crisis which has been unprecedented in the world, a global economic crisis precipitated by the collapse of the world financial systems, and increasingly, as
as we watch in our television screens and get to know what's happening in other parts of the world, the impact of this financial crisis and the economic recession that is attendant to it is being serious, in the sense that, many, many people throughout the world, and indeed in our country as well, are going to suffer very dire consequences as a result of the contracting of the economy. So one of the prominent features of this conjunction is that we are going to be faced with heightened and increasing demand, but with ever diminishing resources. And so it means that the challenge and the call on us to deliver more with less is going to be a very ever recurrent theme in the course and which directs and shapes our work. So in that context, the five strategic priorities the government has outlined, and attendance to that, if you first reject again to the State of the Nation address, there are 10 strategic plans which underpin the way we visualize that we will achieve these outcomes. Our focus in the public service and administration is on the strategic trust number 10, which speaks to the need for us to build an effective state machinery that is able to support the delivery of these key outcomes that we want to achieve in the program of work that we are planning for ourselves. Now, we think that our work in building such an effective state machinery will bring with it six value propositions that we will seek to entrench in the way we deliver on our mandate through this medium-term strategic plan. And the six value propositions speak to, which I think we heard the heart of the PSC, and that is to build this effective democratic state on the basis of democratic values and principles. Values and principles that underpin that which mandates this kind of state in the Constitution, the relevant chapters that the Commissioners referred to, which gives us the vision of this democratic state and the public service that it needs to have. The second one is to build an efficient, effective, developmental state, a state that is very clear and unambiguous about its developmental role. Thirdly, a state that is accountable, caring, and responsive. Probably a state that is technically competent. The need for us to retain highly skilled personnel, to attract highly skilled personnel, is a very important element of building competence in the state. We want a state which is innovative. In this period, which is characterized by the spirit of renewal, we want to build a state which is innovative, a state that could seek to do new things, or new ways in things, given the constraints that we have. And finding the best practices in public service, encouraging it, nourishing it, growing it to scale, so that we can deliver more efficiently, more quickly, and indeed meet the demand of our people. And lastly, I think we want to bring a value which says that the state must be participative, it must be interactive, engaging, accessible, easy to reach, and one which in a caring way can respond to the call to build a caring society. So, Madam Chair, I think the President calls on all of us, and in particular in his call to all the honourable members of Parliament to join hands together
It does not matter where you come from, whether you're from the ruling party or from the opposition. We have a patriotic responsibility in the same level to build a state that seeks to address the needs of all our people. And his call was very poignant when he said that for as long as South Africans would die from preventable disease, and in many other ways, he went to expand in a particular chapter, many other things. He ended up by saying, for as long as there are people who are unable to find work, we shall not rest. And we dare not falter as a people. So he called on us to seize the moment. He said, seize the moment. Let us build an efficient and caring public service, and let us build a caring society together, so that all our people and our nation can benefit. And I'm sure that when you finish with this presentation, that the DG will take us through, you will see that our focus is very clear for the medium-term strategic plan, and it is indeed a call to the nation to do precisely that. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. On the issue of the Public Service Commission, I think we did include the agenda item with the Public Service Commission election nominations, which were definitely going to be an update. Therefore, that area is well taken care of, I can see the huge content for the committee sitting in a world context. We knew that most of the things that were treated as ground running. Part of it is that's why now that's sort of different, but I'll hand over to the director, Daniel.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you for this opportunity. once again, sorry for the logistical blunders with the report, but it eventually got here. Thank you. the presentation gives some bit of background on the ministry, just so that the Honourable Members who are new in this area will get a better understanding of the scope of the ministry, both in terms of its scope of control as well as its budgetary scope. And then a bit of information on the establishment of the DPSA, because 15 years ago, as it were, the PSC and the DPSA were sort of one thing. and it's evolved a long way from there, but I think it's good if the Honourable Members have an understanding and appreciation of that history. We also want to talk about the governance and administration cluster, again for background information, and then move into the vision and mission, mandate and role, programs, priority projects, speak to some of the achievements, and then briefly reflect on the medium-term budget. Honourable Chairperson, the Ministry for Public Service and Administration comprises of the Department of Public Service and Administration. This is the central department within the portfolio which provides policy support to the Minister. We also have the Public Administration Leadership and Management Academy, PALAMA, which used to be known as SAMDI, which plays the role of facilitating training for public servants. We also have the Public Service Sector Training Authority, the PCTA, which continues to draw its budget from the Department of Public Service and Administration, which provides accreditation of training and quality assurance and establishes learnerships. The Public Service Commission, as we know, is an independent constitutional body, and we've heard the presentation from the Commission, but at the moment, the Commission still appropriates its budget via the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. So hence, when we have the budget vote speech on the 30th of June, the Public Service Commission will be included in that budget vote speech. Vote number 10, vote number 9 is the DPSA, and then PALAMA, vote number 11. So it's mentioned here, not implying that it's part of the ministry, but there is that relationship. in terms of the appropriation of the budget via the Minister for Public Service and Administration. The State Information Technology Agency is the government agency which delivers IT services, in which the Minister for Public Service and Administration is the shareholder on behalf of government. And the Center for Public Service Innovation is a government component which was established in 2002-2003 and has a relationship with the ministry. It is currently a government component reporting directly to the minister. The DPSA was really established when we had the democratic transition in 1994. A Minister for the Public Service and Administration was basically appointed, but no policy support was in place for that minister, and the commission, which existed at the time, was undergoing a process of transition. I think it's important to understand, as one sketches very briefly these points, that a major shift that took place with these developments was also a decentralization of public administration and public management. Because the previous system was highly centralized in the Public Service Commission that existed prior to 1994, in terms of the management of different aspects of human resources and labor relations in the public service. But with the onset of democracy, changes happened which led to a split, as it were, within the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission ultimately, in terms of the constitution, becoming an independent body accountable to Parliament with a monitoring and evaluation role, which the Commission has presented in its presentation this morning. And the Ministry for Public Service and Administration and the department being responsible for policy, legislation, and implementation matters. So 1996 was also a key defining moment with the newly defined constitutional mandate of the Public Service Commission and the department emerging with the unbundling of the Public Service Commission and the Department of Public Service and Administration. But I think increasingly over time, the experience of the department has been that it has moved beyond policy making to actually providing hands-on support in the implementation of policy. And I think one of the key issues that the Commission has raised in its presentation is a very relevant issue for this committee. Is the whole issue of compliance with the Public Service Act and public service regulations. And I think what we hope to see emerging, or rather strengthening, because obviously we've worked with the previous portfolio committees, is a greater sense of the complementary role which the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, the Public Service Commission, and the Department needs to play in order to ensure that we get compliance with the various prescripts of the Public Service Act and regulations. There are a number of mandates which have been assigned, I suppose, to the Commission as well as to the Department by Cabinet since 1996. The Community Development Worker Program, which I'm sure many of the members are familiar with, the African Peer Review Mechanism, and major support to the Democratic Republic of Congo are responsibilities that have been assigned to the DPSA since 1996. As I indicated, Honourable Chairperson, we felt we just wanted to talk very briefly about the governance and administration cluster. It is one of five national government clusters which have been established by the new government. There has been some level of reconfiguration under the present government. But I think we're just focusing on the GNA cluster, which essentially has remained more or less intact. With the Ministers for the Public Service and Administration and the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs being the coordinating ministers for the GNA Cabinet Committee, and then the ministers in the Presidency on National Planning and Performance Monitoring Evaluation, Ministers of Home Affairs, Finance, Justice and Constitutional Development, and Women, Children and People with Disabilities being the members of the GNA Cabinet Committee. And really the committee's work is to harmonize the work of the various departments which form the cluster and to coordinate the implementation of policies. Of course, the Cabinet Committee is mirrored by a DG cluster, which is led by the DGs of Public Service and Administration and Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. Moving on to the department's vision and mission, the vision is to become a global leader in public service excellence, with the mission being to support the minister in leading public service transformation, to provide professional advice and support to ensure public service excellence, and to promote good governance nationally on the African continent and globally. The DPSA derives its mandate from different sources. The Constitution, obviously, of 1996, the various manifestos of the ruling party historically, the State of the Nation Address, the medium-term strategic framework, the various decisions made by Cabinet at its Mahutla sittings, the Government Program of Action, Cabinet decisions, directives of the Minister, and then legislative mandate, particularly the Public Service Act of 1994, but also to some extent the CETA Act and the responsibilities which the department has with respect to the CETA Act. Now, the constitutional values on public administration are very much part of the core business, both of the Public Service Commission as well as the Department of Public Service and Administration. And these are listed here. We thought it would be useful to include in the presentation a high standard of professional ethics, efficient economic and effective use of resources, development orientation of public administration, provision of services in an impartial, fair, equitable, and without bias manner, responsiveness, the need to respond to people's needs, and also to encourage the public to participate in policy making, accountability of public administration, transparency, good human resource management and career development practices, and then the issue of representativity, which has been raised and which we will talk about as well in the course of the presentation, and maybe just add our pinch of salt to the discussion which was which came up earlier during the Commission's presentation. I think the Deputy Minister has already indicated some of the key strategic elements which have emerged from the ruling party, which is as government it is our duty to ensure that we implement, but we refer here to two aspects of the manifesto, which talks about the central and strategic role which the developmental state needs to make in the economy, needing to ensure more effective government, improving coordination and planning efforts of the developmental state by means of a planning entity, which is the National Planning Commission. And then a review of the structure of government to ensure effective service delivery. And, of course, various decisions have been made and changes in the macro structure of government, which the DPSA is very much responsible in terms of providing leadership within the administration to ensure that these take place. And then an important aspect of a successful developmental state is investment in public sector workers, and in turn our people expect that they execute the tasks with which they have been entrusted. This means that the right and adequate numbers of personnel should be placed in the correct positions. And where this is not the case, government should have the capacity to implement corrective measures, either through training or redeployment where warranted. Now, obviously, the deployment of public servants, particularly as the Deputy Minister has also emphasized in his introduction, the financial and economic constraints which we currently have obviously casts a new light on this particular task. But nonetheless, it remains as urgent and as pressing, and we will be referring to this in various parts of the presentation as well. Now, as indicated, the structure of government has been reviewed, decisions have been taken, and a new configuration of ministerial portfolios was implemented from the 10th of May. We are coordinating implementation of the new macro structure of the state. We are assisting with the legal and technical work required to effect name changes and transfer of functions. We obviously work very closely with the National Treasury and the Department of Public Works to support the departments. We have name changes, we have splits where departments are being divided and ministries even being divided, and we have new configurations where functions, for example, forestry, which used to be with the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry, now being transferred to the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. So there is an intense process underway, which no doubt over time we would also engage with the committee around this. In terms of the State of the Nation address, the Deputy Minister has given some of the highlights, but certainly President Zuma did refer to the need for improved public services and the strengthening of democratic institutions, and then to ensure that all three spheres, local, provincial and national, improve service delivery through the establishment of a single public service, which will certainly in the coming months and year become a major focus of this committee when we bring the draft legislation before the committee. And brief the committee around this particular process. This administration will insist on putting people first in service delivery, ensure courteous and efficient service from front counter staff in the provision of services in all government departments, which refers, of course, to the Batupili principles. And in this era of renewal, we'll move towards a more interactive government. So the whole constitutional value of responsiveness and participatory participation by citizens in public services and administration was emphasized by the President in his State of the Nation address. He also made reference to continued participation in the reconstruction and development of the African continent, especially post-conflict situations, and we have already indicated our involvement in the DRC. Reference also being made to intensifying South-South relations, but also in the context of the Deputy Minister's introduction, that the public service must be able to respond to the economic downturn by spending public funds wisely and fruitfully. So what we've done in terms of our medium-term strategy, we've incorporated the State of the Nation priorities. And we obviously need to respond to the challenges confronting the public service, cognizant of the impact which the global economic crisis has both on ourselves as a department, but on the public service more generally. The Minister also referred to the medium-term strategic framework, I've referred to the Governance and Administration Program of Action. Now, this program of action really flows from the various Cabinet Makhutse decisions and the State of the Nation address. We are finalizing the program of action on the basis of the medium-term strategic framework, which was discussed in the May Makhutse and is being finalized by Cabinet. And then clusters submit quarterly reports to Cabinet and also report to Cabinet Makusa in January and July every year. There are progress reports which are also posted on government's website, which are also a useful source of information. And then the Minister for the Public Service and Administration holds media briefings on Program of Action progress from time to time. Just to flesh out a bit the legislative mandate, in terms of the Public Service Act of 1994, the DPSA supports the Minister in a number of areas, transforming and modernizing the public service, overseeing changes to the structure of the public service, establishing norms and standards for human resource management and development, conditions of service, labor relations, information technology and service delivery, issuing directives and regulations for the public service, formulating the National Anti-Corruption Strategy, and then exercising oversight over the State Information Technology Agency. The next two slides just flesh out the programs which we have. These are the budgetary programs. Program one, as in the case of all departments, is administration, dealing with the Ministry and Communications, the Office of the Director General. Obviously now, not mentioned, we have a new deputy ministry as well. This will also be part of program one. The Program Management Office, Legal Services, Corporate Services, and Internal Audit. Program 2 deals with Human Resource Management and Development, which focuses on human resource development, human resource planning, diversity management, employment practices and career management, the senior management service, employee health and wellness, and the Public Service Sector Education and Training Authority. The budget is drawn from this particular program. Management of Compensation, which we are likely to rename Labor Relations, Remuneration and Job Evaluation, Conditions of Service, Negotiations and Labor Relations, and Special Projects. Program 4 deals with Information Technology and Management, focusing on Information Communication Technology Program, the Government Chief Information Officer Operations, and E-Government Architecture and Integration. Then Program 5 is Service Delivery Improvement, with its focus on Bajupili, Service Delivery Improvement Mechanism, Service Delivery Facilitation, the Community Development Workers Program resides within Program 5. And then Program 6 is Governance, which deals with public sector anti-corruption, international and African affairs, planning, monitoring, evaluation, and the African peer review mechanism, and then research as well. Just to flesh out the priority projects per program, for the medium term, in the Program 2, Human Resource Management and Development, the establishment of an integrated health risk assessment and management system for the public service, the policy on compulsory training programs for human resource practitioners being developed and implemented, the implementation of the Job Access Strategic Framework and the Gender Equality Strategic Framework. This speaks to the issues raised by Honorable Rasool in this committee meeting this morning. The implementation of competency assessments for the senior management service members on a compulsory basis. The facilitation of the implementation of performance management and development system. The HR Connect implementation roll out to the entire public service. Now, this is a skills database system which we have been developing for a number of years and which is making some progress now, which will over time allow us to really begin to engage in a more detailed and systematic way with the skills position of the public service. Because the existing databases on Parasol, the workplace skills plans, do not give us the in-depth understanding that we really require if we to be able to speak meaningfully to the question of do we have the necessary skills in place to deliver on the programs that we need to deliver across government. And then developing an organizational development strategic framework and a social cluster generic organizational structure. The issue of organizational structures at departmental level and the sort of macro structure of government are very firmly on the agenda of the department for the medium term. In terms of management of compensation, the implementation of the remuneration policy framework for the public service, a review of pension and medical provisioning in the public service, updating and transfer of EQUATE to a web-enabled platform. Now, EQUATE is a job evaluation system which is used across the public service, national and provincial government. So we are busy updating this job evaluation system and transferring it to a web-enabled platform. Developing and implementing the human resource model of the integrated financial management system. This is a massive project of the National Treasury. The introduction of new transversal systems for management of finance, supply chain management, as well as human resource management, and we are responsible for the human resource module of the system. Strengthening social partnership for good governance by convening the public sector summit. There is a major new emphasis with our minister on the importance of transforming the labor relations terrain and building social partnerships with labor and moving away from the adversarial relationships which have developed over more recent years. So one of the important steps in this process will be the convening of a public sector summit, which is actually one of the clauses in the agreement of 2007, resolution number 1 of 2007, that a public sector summit should be convened. It hasn't been convened up until now, but there is now agreement in the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council that the summit will be held in September. So that will also be an important development, and I'm sure the portfolio committee will have its representatives present in that summit as well. Then monitoring and evaluating the wage bill trends in the public service. Monitoring and evaluating the implementation and impact of occupation-specific dispensations, a highly topical issue. Obviously, I will refer to it later in the presentation as well. Developing and introducing appropriate legal dispensation for the single public service, and implementing a remuneration policy framework for the single public service. In terms of information and technology management, the first priority is developing a prototype to enable 6 pro-poor services, so to have e-government facilities for the provisions, for the application of IDs, registration of childbirth, the foster care grant, application for pensions, the application for maintenance, and notification of death. These are the 6 key services that have been identified to be e-enabled, to have a platform so that these services can be accessed online. Then the connection of 52 Tucson centers to a centralized ICT infrastructure, as well as the installation of 45 new general service counters. These were the multi-purpose community centers, which are one-stop shops, which have been established in various parts of the country, the aim being to establish at least 1 in each municipality in the first round. But this aspect focuses on ensuring that they are connected to IT infrastructure of government. And then a report on the ICT expenditure patterns in the public service and making recommendations on strategies to save and reduce costs and expenditure. And then a report on the number of call centers, utilization and optimization of infrastructure and spend and consolidation strategy to create efficiency and better service delivery. There are numerous call centers which exist across government. Even numerous hotlines, and I think we just want to do a review of these and to see whether they are all operating optimally or whether we need to look at rationalizing some of them. Then developing an architecture blueprint for information technology in government, and then developing a government-wide information security governance framework, which I think is very important, obviously, as we move more and more into e-enablement, that we have the necessary security systems in place to avoid fraudulent activities in particular. In terms of service delivery improvements, the first priority mentioned here is cascading the BPCMEP, the Budget PV Change Management Engagement Program, to national and provincial departments. Now, we did embark in the last few years on a program which engaged municipalities around Budget PV. In terms of the current legislative framework, municipalities are not part of the public service, and the Budget PV framework was drafted for the public service. But we believe the values and principles of Budget PV are relevant for all spheres of government. So we have had a successful engagement at the municipal level, and we want to intensify our engagement at national and provincial level as well. I think we all need to acknowledge that the uptake of Budget PV principles in practice has been disappointing. I think all of us, South African society as a whole, would be very supportive of the Budget PV framework and principles, but unfortunately the uptake at the departmental level has been problematic, and the Public Service Commission has also commented on this in their presentation this morning. Then assisting departments to develop service delivery models using a service delivery model toolkit. There are good examples where service delivery modeling has helped to speed up service delivery. If we take Home Affairs with all its problems, the issuing of IDs was subject to a rigorous process of reviewing the service delivery model, of reviewing the service delivery process, cutting out the unnecessary steps, and by the end of last year, in 90% of Home Affairs offices across the board had reduced the time of issuing an ID document from 120 days to 30 days. So we believe very strongly if this kind of approach is applied across the board to service delivery, we will be able to significantly improve our service standards and our delivery against those service standards. Then support departments to develop and implement 3-year service delivery improvement plans. This is really the crux of Budget PV. Departments need to develop service delivery improvement plans in which they set clear standards, and then we are able to hold them accountable. Like I say, the Public Service Commission, the Portfolio Committee, as well as the DPSA, in terms of ensuring that they can actually stick to their standards and implement them effectively. And then provide extensive support to one province and one sector in the implementation of Budget PV and other service delivery improvement programs. Obviously, we would want to work more broadly than that, but we also do have capacity constraints with respect to the amount of hands-on support that we can lend to departments and provinces around public service administration, service delivery improvement matters. Then finalize a CDW policy framework and develop norms and standards. Support the implementation of the War on Poverty campaign by establishing institutional arrangements for the implementation program. And then finalizing the Justice Cluster Know Your Service Rights booklet and distributing to target communities and stakeholders. This is one way in which the department does engage more directly with communities through these various Know Your Service Rights booklets that we've put together and translated into all our languages. And it's mentioned our achievements in terms of what we've done in the social sector with this program. On the governance program, develop a consolidated system for one-time reporting on various public service regulations. Again, this is about monitoring compliance. Monitor implementation of the African Peer Review Mechanism Program of Action and submit progress reports to the heads of state and government. Implement the conflict of interest framework. Now, this does relate to the question which came up earlier around one aspect of it, which is the submission of the financial disclosures. We are currently with a cabinet memorandum dealing with this matter at the cabinet level, in which some of the issues that came up this morning were discussed or have been discussed and are being discussed by cabinet. That pertains to the roles and responsibility of executive authorities and directors general. Given all the responsibility of executive authorities, we are actually recommending that this be delegated to directors general, but we're also talking about the structures and processes and capacity that should be put in place to monitor these much more regularly, which obviously needs to take on a greater urgency in the light of the Auditor General report that has been reported on in the media of late. And then complete a follow-up compliance audit report on the implementation of the minimum anti-corruption capacity. There are capacity standards which we have set, which departments need to adhere to in terms of assigning officials with various roles and responsibilities in order to monitor compliance with various anti-corruption measures within departments, in order to set up the necessary investigative capacity, in order to set standards on turning around investigation and administrative prosecution of cases that come up with respect to corruption and so on. And then South Africa is has acceded to the OECD anti-bribery convention, and there are various processes which are taking place in accordance with that accession, and those include the phase 2 evaluation. We've gone through a phase 1 evaluation, and we will be going through phase 2 evaluation later on in the year. Then developing anti-corruption training and awareness material, convening the SADC, the Regional Anti-Corruption Committee, and then hosting the Anti-Corruption Summit and Experts Roundtable to approve the Program of Action requirements. The Commission did refer to the National Anti-Corruption Forum, which they have been providing the secretariat for, and the budget constraints which they're facing around that. We do work together with them around this particular program. Just to run through some of the achievements, which also highlight some of the challenges, we launched the Job Access Strategic Framework. This is a strategic framework which deals with the recruitment and retention of people with disabilities in the public service. And I think the question was raised around the targets. I think we would argue that we need to stick with those targets, but we need to ensure compliance by departments with those targets. And we are actually preparing a cabinet memorandum which would be also requesting that the portfolio committee does play a specific role in terms of holding departments to account for their failure to meet various targets, and maybe even appearing before the committee to explain what the problems and the challenges are. A report on the Public Service Women Management Week has been finalized. The representation of women in the senior management service has improved and is now at 34.4%, but we do have a 50-50 target in the public service for women in senior management, and again, we believe that target is attainable if we have proper management of the recruitment process and dedication towards meeting the target, that it would be possible to meet the target. A report on the barriers to access for women, blacks, and disabilities was completed, and the following barriers were identified. Lack of human resource plans. So we do have a strategic framework on human resource planning in the public service. But then, of course, getting departments to comply, to develop those plans, is another challenge. Because we believe if they have the plans, then it becomes easier to meet the targets. But in the absence of proper planning, that is when we are unable to meet the targets. The human resource and employment equity plans are not talking to one another, so when we look at these different instruments, the employment equity plans being the requirements for the Department of Labor, the human resource plans being requirements for our departments, then we see that there are discrepancies and they're not talking to one another. And then, like I've indicated, lack of targeted recruitment strategies and training skills that would assist women and people with disabilities to advance and be more mobile within the system. We've completed the HIV and AIDS and TB policy for the public service. We've trained 200 public servants nationally, on the management of HIV and AIDS. And all departments have been trained on the use of HIV and AIDS costing model. The health and productivity management and wellness management policies, the safety, health, environment, risk and quality policy for the public service has been completed. Now, this suite of policies is really about trying to transform the workplace, to make it more friendly in terms of the environment, the physical environment of it, as well as the relational environment that takes place within that. Because we believe that transforming workplace relations is not simply about improving wages and conditions of service. It is about looking at the other aspects. The physical working environment, as we know, is very difficult in many parts of our country, where the offices of various departments don't have basic facilities in place. They don't have the equipment being updated or repaired in time, and that does hamper service delivery. So this is part of our policy framework, which tries to talk at ways in which the working environment can be improved. I've mentioned the HR Connect, which is the skills database. So we are in the process of collecting a lot of information and collating that information. And we're hoping that if departments have made sure that that information is accurate, that we will over time be able to speak more intelligently to the status of skills in the public service. And then a policy and procedure document on the revolving door. sorry, that should be two separate bullets there. The revolving door. I'll see that. Okay.
Okay. I think a proper presentation provided. The problem is that we ran out of time. And of course, I would request the committee to extend it because they are honorable members who indicated the court commitment immediately after the sale of the meeting and the legal drop and the investment problem.
Okay, now I'll speed it up then. This slide deals with implementation of the OSD. All categories of nurses, legally qualified professionals, educators, social workers, this is where agreements have been signed and implementation is taking place. The social workers was signed week before last, so implementation is now moving forward. The main outstanding ones are correctional officials and dental and medical officers, but there is a tabling today of the proposals on the dental, medical, and emergency medical officers, which is being discussed in the PSCDC today. The implementation of PILLA, this is the policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement. which has been established over the last 3 years, which has led to considerable savings on the side of government, which provides health risk managers, which assist heads of departments to know whether applications for ill health retirement and incapacity leave are genuine. A report on the refinement of the EQUESS system, I mentioned that earlier, and then the HR module on the IFMS, and we've done a review of the CETA call center, although we intend to do a more general call center review. A report on e-government strategy for ICT connectivity has been developed. A GIS survey was conducted in over 80 departments and other key government institutions. This is about the accessibility of various services to the public. So we've developed a GIS which allows us to see in terms of physical location of a clinic or a school in relation to where communities are. We have completed this. It comes out very favorably in the education sector, but less favorably in the health sector in terms of accessibility. Then the IT shared service model for the public sector was incorporated into the new IT plan for government, and roadshows were conducted in all 9 provinces. The Bajpayee Change Management Engagement Program, I spoke about that. More than 1,000 officials were trained in 274 municipalities on this program. And then the best practice DVD and booklets were shared during the Bajpayee Learning Network, and they continue to be shared during the Bajpayee Change Management Engagement Program. The Know Your Service Right booklet, I mentioned that, for the social cluster, was translated into all official languages, and over 60,000 booklets were printed and distributed to communities and various government institutions. During 2008-09, over 600 CEWs were recruited across the country and trained on the CEW learnership, and over 3,000 CEWs were still deployed in municipalities throughout the country. And as I've indicated, we're still working on the policy framework. And then the DRC support program, where the main focus of activity is the biometric census. It's been completed in 2 provinces, Kinshasa and Bakongo, and it is 80% complete in Bandundu and Maniema provinces, and it's also been launched in the province of Kasai Oriental. The 6th Pan-African Conference of Ministers of Public Service and Administration was successfully hosted in October 2008, and a long-term strategy was adopted, and a draft Africa Public Service Charter was also adopted in that conference. The African Association for Public Administration and Management was launched in August of 2008. The minimum anti-corruption capacity guidelines, which I mentioned, were developed and translated into public service regulations to enforce compliance. And then the OECD Phase 1 on anti-bribery was completed. I mentioned that already. Approval was granted for the implementation of the resolutions of the 2nd Pan-African National Anti-Corruption Bodies, the African Forum on Fighting Corruption, and the Global Forum 5 on Fighting Corruption and Safeguarding Integrity. And then the African Peer Review Mechanism Progress Report for South Africa was presented to the APRM Forum of Heads of State at the beginning of this year. Chairperson, I move now on to the medium-term budget vote 9 summary. We see that we have a larger budget. We are a larger organization than the Public Service Commission, but we also have very small increases. They were actually cut. I think we received, in terms of the ministry, the biggest cuts once there was a process of review in the light of the current global economic meltdown. So we have experienced some serious cuts. It makes it very difficult for us to do the hands-on support. I think that's what really is very inhibiting in terms of our budget cuts. But we are, like the Deputy Minister has indicated, looking into ways in which we can maybe work more smarter rationalize our programs and projects to ensure that we're really focusing on the very, very important ones, and minimizing wastage in a number of areas are the things we're talking about. This just is a pie chart looking at the allocation per program of the different programs, admin being the biggest one. And then the economic classification, there's two slides. There's the graph here. And then there's the second one. Now, unfortunately, in the hard copies, there is an error, which I picked up, which is corrected on the slide. Under goods and services for 2010-2011, you would just need to correct those figures. 217,980 for 2010-2011, goods and services. And then 219,525. For 2011-2012, and then obviously that impacts on the total. 402,769, not 679, 769. And 417,375 for 2011-2012. Sorry about that. And then finally, in conclusion, the department's medium-term strategy is aligned to new and established mandates. As we've indicated, the new mandates include those emanating from the macro reorganization of government, the State of the Nation Address, and the May Cabinet of Hutler. But we are reviewing our strategy in order to identify gaps and to reprioritize resource allocation. And we are going to be holding an operational review session just after the budget vote, just to make sure that we have full alignment and to streamline our operational plan in the light of the new priorities. Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, thank you very much. Sorry I took so long.
You know that we needed this time, actually, this briefing in details, and unfortunately, because of the circumstances, it definitely could not happen as it was supposed to be. We needed this interaction more. Perhaps we need just an input from the department and interactive with the health, but unfortunately, we have to do this. I must indicate before the members leave that I know that eager to post questions. Some of the questions can be written down, send them to the department, and get them. But just quickly, in terms of the briefing of all the peers, you know, based on the time setup, I think one has to indicate that the process is in due course, you know, and to receive, you know, the attention that it deserves, you know, and we shouldn't panic, not a forgotten process. It's very evident that it's in true. At the moment, as one can indicate, just this morning, we were actually seated on finalizing the process and proceeding with the way forward. There are some documents that need to be tabled, that goes, that gets accompanied by the President's letter and that members of the know of, which we had to look into. So this morning, some of those processes have been looked into after the interaction with President and the speaker as well. So as we have said, as we said now, we are definitely going to reopen to the advocate for zero documents. Those who did apply in the past of that don't need to reapply. But it will be just after the consideration of the proper procedural requirements that have already been undertaken or are taken care of in the meeting. So I just needed the members to know that it's the report court and we're definitely at the public committee in terms of what will happen. And I'm sure as we're taking the process will be with the national with the speaker. Okay, I will take an question.
Okay, I'll follow with you. Thank you very much for your indulgence, and I hope you understand. I actually offer a my colleague here will answer the answer, so I will get the answer to the answer here.
what you talk about is taking the detriment of what we've been doing. I've been in Parliament for 4 years, the previous term. First on SCOPA, and then on Labour, and I've never once seen a minister in the portfolio committee or the SCOPA hearing. So this is quite refreshing. And I'm very happy to see that this is the way it should be done. Let's not only the deputy minister, but hopefully also the minister at the later stage. To get to the more critical issues, the declaration of personal interest that people not returning came up for the Public Service Commission. The Director General indicated that it's been discussed. Comment here. It's not good enough. We want to see some action, and I want to know what definite steps have been taken against those senior managers who have not returned their disclosures of their personal interest. My second point, I haven't seen the annual report of the department. We've got a strategic plan, we've got a budget and so on, but I haven't actually seen just have a question in the absence of the annual report. What was the Auditor General's findings of these audits on your department? My third point, Madam Chair, I've got all the achievements as mentioned in the presentation here. I just have a comment here. I find it very disappointing. We see, for example, plans are being finalized and shows have been conducted, road shows, and so many learnerships or CDWs have been deployed. And this report has been finalized, the report was completed, and so on. So it's all process. I don't see many hard outcomes, actual results that affect the citizens on the ground in terms of service delivery. We want to see, for example, a call center that you've now reviewed the call center. How many more calls have you now received or can you handle than before? That's the kind of output we want to see, not the call center that's been reviewed, maybe once again. It's actually not an output. And then lastly, the PSC budget. We heard the concerns from the Public Service Commission. They don't have enough money to do all the work that they have to do, but they get their money from the department. But I don't see actually the allocation to the Public Service Commission in the department's budget, the allocation, that pie chart, all the other departments, but where can we find the allocation of the Public Service Commission? Madam Chair, thank you very much, and I'll get the answers later on from my colleagues. If you'll please excuse me.
Yes, I'd like to thank the department for its input. That was very good and that was great. What I would like to know is, in the SDI, the service delivery improvement, while I was doing door-to-door campaigns in the election campaign, it's obvious that there is a serious problem with service delivery on the ground. And I think it would be a good idea for there to be some sort of process where the middle and senior management, including the DG, but both the department and the Public Service Commission, go on a sort of door-to-door campaign, and they take with them the CDWs in both rural and urban areas, just so that they can get a real understanding of how difficult it is. I'd also suggest, if this does happen, that where they go for this door-to-door campaign, if they go where there's no service centres where you can walk to one, because there's a lot of places on the ground, and these reports are all very nice, but in reality, service delivery on the ground is in serious trouble. And we really only have 5 years to fix this in a measurable way. That's my first suggestion. And the second one is, you were talking about the skills in the workplace skills plan not giving you the information. And then you further went on to say that there will be a public sector summit where labor will be engaged with. Is it not possible to engage directly with the larger unions, in bilateral to actually talk to this workplace skills plan problem that you're not getting, because I'm sure that they will have input into that. Thank you.
No,
no, no.
Thank you very
much. Just three quick questions. The one is on the top slide of page 10, where the department speaks on the call centers and the hotline and the review thereof. I think that the key question that I would want to ask in terms of whether it needs to be rationalized. There may eventually be a need to rationalize, but I think that what may be logging the calls is one thing. I think the capacity to act on the call is for me the critical matter. And so rather than redo the visible section as a priority, I think it is maybe useful to check what is the capacity to process those calls, to get them to the relevant people, and to then act on them, whether it is a production hotline or whether it is, because I think that from the earlier discussion on the PSC, I think that the PSCs almost admit that they're getting all these calls, but not getting compliance from departments to investigate and to deal with perpetrators and so forth. And I think that creates a crisis of faith and trust in government. So I would say maybe don't tamper yet with the rationalization, but really just look at the backup. So the second question is the next page, the top slide. You know, this conflict of interest and the Auditor General's report. Now, I think that the discourse that is out there and that is now changing is that for some reason or other, the Auditor General was silenced to avoid embarrassment during an election campaign. I think that, I don't think the department has the answers, but I would want to know which financial year the Auditor General was speaking about. Secondly, is it provisional uncovering by the Auditor General, or is the Auditor General reporting on instances which were uncovered by departments or government agencies? Because that throws a completely different light on it. And thirdly, depending both on who uncovered it and where it was taken, where is the action lying on it? Because I know, for example, that one of the things goes into the laundry services of the Western Cape, the ICE procurement. And I know that some of those officials have long gone. And now it's a major thing that the Auditor General has on hold, has uncovered certain things. So I think that there is a need for somewhere in government to put that matter into context. The last one is your reply to the issue of disability figures, and I'm very heartened that there's a market that can support the 2% representation of disability. So that's very good. And then I think that this department has to front up, to use the right term, has to front up that somewhere it is not able to ensure compliance throughout the public service before it goes to anyone else, because I think that being the primary driver of human resource policy, human resource implementation and compliance, I think that there's something that this department has to front up to. Jefferson, that things like having said all of that, I think that I must thank and echo the thanks for the minister being present, but also for the presentation that has been made.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, without going back into too many of the issues around the call centers, I think it's key to for us to understand how many of the call centers are serviced by CSIS and SOL, and how many are serviced by outside service providers. And I think this is also key in terms of looking at job creation within the public sector. You know, how many of those jobs are actually created within the public sector itself? And then additionally, in terms of those measurements that are lacking in the report, I'd like to see those measurements as well. And having said that rural development is a key initiative for all of us as South Africa, it is deeply concerning if we refer to call centers and one goes on the campaign trail and sees little access to call centers. And I think it's important for us to remember that many of the individuals who don't have access to structures will never actually use a call center, probably have never even seen a call center number. And then additionally, Director General, you referred to the Home Affairs and then also the ID documents. I must tell you that I found it quite frightening on the campaign trail how many senior citizens of this country have not actually been able to get their ID documents. So the statistics, I would think, perhaps
need to be re-looked at because our senior citizens need their ID documents back to get their social grants as well. But I think those are quite key. But having said all of that, Deputy Minister, thank you very much for being present, and then additionally to the Director General, thank you. There is just one point of indulgence, if you wouldn't mind. There was a point when you were asked to move on that I'd like you to just cover for me, and that is the policy and procedure document on the revolving door remuneration policy for PF has been approved. Now, you actually don't say it one, and for me that's quite a good point, so if you could just elaborate on that, if the other members would indulge me on that point, please.
Okay, the committee, I mean, the input from the presentation was, I mean, very good. So, I'm sure if other members for certain issues will just leave, but will allow the DG to take up some of the issues that are
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Maybe just to clarify in terms of the question posed by the Honourable Dreyer, what is being discussed at Cabinet level is how to manage the declarations of interest. It is a responsibility, as has been pointed out by Professor Sangweni, for individual executive authorities. Individual ministers must take action against those who do not submit their disclosures. It's neither the responsibility of the department nor the commission to do so. Our responsibility as a department is to ensure that we have a system which is as foolproof, if you like, as possible, which would ensure that everyone signs the declarations on time and submits them. So we are looking at modifying aspects of the current framework, but the action must be taken by the ministers under the current framework. It's not up to the department or the commission to do so. The commission does report on it because the disclosures are housed with the Public Service Commission. Okay, the issue of the outcomes that one wants to see. I think at the end of the day, we all always need to understand that public service and administration is decentralized in our country. What we do is we develop legislation and a common policy framework. And we, together with other institutions, we are part of the executive. Our minister is a member of the executive. The Public Service Commission is a constitutional body. The Portfolio Committee is part of Parliament. In different ways, we need to ensure compliance and accountability in terms of that policy framework. But it is decentralized. A lot of the work we do tries to help us all to understand what the problems are, what the issues are, so that we can all intervene in our different ways. So when we complete a report, yes, we complete a report. It is true, we need to start measuring the impact of the various reports and interventions we make. I think that point is taken. And hopefully we will be able to do that more effectively over time. annual reports for the 2008-09 financial year are still being completed. The Auditor General is still completing their work. The previous year, 2007-2008, the DPSA had an unqualified audit with no emphasis of matter. I won't speculate on what the current one will be, but I'm smiling at the moment, so you can deduce whatever you like. So the audit report was clean, and we can furnish the committee with copies of that report, since it is a new committee. We appreciate that. We will endeavor to furnish the committee with copies of our 2008 annual report. Yes, perhaps Honourable Dragon understands clearly that the PSC is a separate vote. The budget is appropriated by the Minister for the Public Service and Administration, but it is a separate vote. So The budget we presented is a budget vote for the Department of Public Service and Administration, vote number 9. It's not the vote for Palama. The only one that's included there in terms of institutions that I mentioned, or the two, is the PCTA and the Center for Public Service and Innovation. But for the Public Service Commission and Palama, it's a separate vote altogether. So the figures that are presented there do not include those separate votes. I think the point is well taken. Certainly, I think from Honourable Williams, that we need to get senior managers into the field. But let me point out that there is a program which was incubated in the DPSA called Project Kaedu, which is a training program for senior managers. And we even incorporated in the performance management system a requirement that all senior managers need to go to the coalface of service delivery for a period of time during each performance cycle. And there are many senior managers who have had an action-oriented training and a deployment to the coalface. But I think the point is well taken, and it's a constructive point that I think many senior managers do need to have more interactive time with communities in order to better understand service delivery challenges. The workplace skills plans are there, and we use them to make analysis, but they tend to be quite high level. The kind of detailed analysis which we would need to do, which also shows individual progression in terms of skills, how people are progressing over a period of time in terms of skills development. So do people come in, how many people who come in a certain area receive additional training, get additional qualifications, get greater skills? That's the level one is talking about. But the workplace skills plans are there. They are in place. They are a current reference point, including the PERSOL system, for any analysis that we need to make around the skills position in the public service. But I think certainly the whole issue of how, as government and labor, we work together not only to monitor skills development, but to build skills in the public service will definitely form part of the public sector summit. I think Honourable Rasool does make a fundamental point. It's not simply about reviewing the centres. It's really ensuring that there is follow-up when complaints are made or when issues are raised through the various call centres. I think one of the issues, though, that we are trying to focus on is on the cost effectiveness, because we believe that, and I think that relates to the Honourable Udendal point, that you get call centre service both by CETA and outside providers, which will be sort of exorbitant in terms of cost. And I think we have had concerns about the cost of the CETA call centre itself. So there is a government portal, the Budget PD Gateway portal, which provides information on all services, and there is also a call centre number where citizens can phone for information about particular services, which is operated by CETA. And I think that's the one that we are currently finalising an assessment of, but a very big focus on the cost effectiveness of it, which I think relates to Honourable Udendal's question as well. I think the issue of the DPSA fronting up in order to ensure compliance is the big question when it comes to our current position vis-à-vis budget cuts. There have been cases in over the last 8 or 9 years, where also together with the Commission, we have gone full-time into the Eastern Cape, for example, 2002, 2003. We went into KwaZulu-Natal, 2004, 2005, with varying degrees of success. In some of the departments that we actively engaged with and intervened, I think there was positive response and positive developments that flowed out of that. But it is very expensive. It's labor-intensive. It's cost-intensive. And I think these are some of the strategic choices that will need to be made by all the relevant bodies in the governmental system going forward, is to what extent can the DPSA play an implementation support role, and to what extent does it play an implementation oversight role on behalf of the executive. So I think those are strategic questions which we are going to have to pose. But we certainly try, but sometimes we also bite off more than we can chew in terms of trying to front up to ensure compliance. We did, and we had a lot of debates in the previous committee and with the Public Service Commission around the amendments to the Public Service Act, and no doubt when we deal with the Single Public Service Act as well, we would need to raise these specific questions, also to ensure that the powers are there, because that's the argument we always have with the Ministers of Finance and Treasury, is we believe that the PFMA gives more power to the Minister of Finance and the Treasury to ensure compliance in comparison with the Public Service Act, where we don't believe we have power to ensure compliance. And then, of course, we have the Public Service Commission, and we need to ensure that role, those responsibilities, the constitutional obligations are also respected. So hence, the need for a discussion about our respective roles and responsibilities with vis-à-vis compliance would be very important. I think certainly, you know, the question about ID documentation, the extent to which the new system effectively dealt with backlogs, the extent to which it was a forward-looking system. I do think the department does need to be applauded on the ID documents and what they've done in the last 18 months or so. But I think certainly there is still a major challenge which has been pointed to by the Honourable Udendal. I think on the issue of the rural development priority, as I've indicated, we developed a geographical information system which now is starting to show its first results. And again, it's the kind of report or aspects of the report which we could include in a presentation to Parliament. We're just finalizing it now, which does begin to look at different sectors and accessibility per sector to various service delivery institutions. And I just gave a high-level indication that education is looking more accessible than health. But I think over time we would be able to include within that GIS even call centers, but a whole variety of services. But what we've done is we've incorporated as a layer within that GIS the human resource data which we have from PRASAL, which can begin then to give an indication in terms of that particular service delivery point in that area, do they have the necessary skills and competencies in place in terms of the deployment of staff to ensure that a quality service is delivered. And I'm sure we know that what the findings will point to initially will be major discrepancies both within urban areas as well as between urban and rural areas in terms of that. Then just to clarify the one slide there, when I was requested to hurry up, as I indicated there, the slide is up, we actually need another bullet. The remuneration policy for the public service has been approved is actually a separate bullet. The revolving door is about creating the scope for secondment between the public service and the private sector, as well as the possibility of sabbaticals, both for academics who would want to do their sabbaticals within the public service, as well as for public servants who have served for a certain length of time, who would then be afforded the opportunity of possibly furthering their studies or undertaking some form of extended study leave. So that's really what the revolving door enabler policy was all about. Thank you. you very much, Honourable Chairperson. I hope I've answered all the questions.
And I can realize the need for follow-up?
No, not a follow-up. I just want to know if the Director General has forgotten, or for good reason has chosen not to answer the question on the Auditor General report. I will accept the item.
Okay,
it's a follow-up, but
okay, you can do that.
I
think it's important, I really must insist that it's not just senior management, but you, Director General, go down to the ground. Because the days of sitting in big offices and reading consultant reports are over. There's a real serious problem with service delivery in South Africa at the moment. And it's all very well, I know you said that public service is decentralized, and but you're making up these policies for what's happening on the ground. And it's not getting implemented on the ground, so I really do think that the DGs and the senior and middle management must make the time, take a CDW, which is over 3,000 across the country, and just go into the community for one afternoon and go to six houses and ask them what they think of service delivery in general, so that you actually get an understanding of this. Because it really is not as happy as what you're making it out to be on the ground at the moment.
Yeah, at least I'm sure you intend to take up the question, particularly the one that is raised by Honourable Alphonse. And also, of course, in terms of the issue that Honourable Member is raising, I'm sure at some point there will be a realization of all of us contributing and playing our different roles to improve the situation. I know the concern that is raising are quite genuinely expressed on the ground. Therefore, need all of us interacting quite jointly.
No, I mean, I think I do agree with the point made by the Honourable Williams. I don't have a problem with that point at all. I was just trying to explain that Kaedu program was part of a cabinet resolution of August 2004, which stated that all senior managers need to have a deployment to the coal face of service delivery. So I'm saying that there is a provision actually which requires it, but I certainly do not disagree in any measure with what you've said. I don't necessarily think it's rosy either. I was trying to indicate that the GIS accessibility study that we've just been doing is raising serious concerns, simply at the level of access, not necessarily about once there is access, the quality of the service encountered. So I think certainly we do appreciate the point you've made there. And my apologies to the Honourable Rasool. I did not intentionally ignore the question. I think you were asking if I'm correct about the years in which the study was done. The Auditor General has been working on this study for a while, since about 2005. So I think it covers a span of years since then. And I think they've certainly uncovered a major problem, as we all know, which needs to be dealt with quite decisively. I don't know if that answers. Thank you.
Thank you to all of you who've been part of this committee today. I'm sure we'll all have to be part of a fruitful meeting. We had a lot to do and we've dealt with much. And I definitely want to thank the Deputy Minister who's been part of this, Honourable Fellow, to be part of us. We've seen that it's very much appreciated. And also I must thank the DG, the input of had a good impact. Of course, we have many more questions, but I think we cannot really interact with it. We have other ways of engaging on other things, but this was an overall, input that made us all to move in one direction. The commissioner, led by Professor Samway, and we also want to thank all of you for being here and the presentation done by OT Ramsey. We really believe this was a restful exercise, that PG, I'm sure, issues that came up are issues that we definitely have to work on. Our project will be waiting for us. It definitely will do some breakdowns. Wherever we need to interact and engage, members are free to put up questions. you will send the questions to the department so that we also interact on Salome. We are definitely going to have a presentation at Palama in the coming week. Of course, there's some quite important issues. The issue of the forecast, you know, the recent development of Palama, we might engage with them at that level. But, you know, there's quite a lot to the social development plans that are uncoordinated. We really have to find out whether should it be the DTI forecast, or we can have also in terms of the impact on the implementation. But there's quite a lot that we should really be sure to really talk about. At this point in time, we can't exhaust everything, but we really send the input, and now we are at one level. I know that quite soon, you know, I'm really glad about you raising the issue of the bill that will also be presented that you will introduce. We are looking forward to that, because we believe that part of one way that will sort of assist us to move forward in the development of various areas, you know, and also reaching other levels when we are able to reach at this point in time. We definitely are looking for it, and we believe that as the committee, we will give it the sufficient thought and attention that it deserves. I would like to thank everybody else, and in the light of time, and thank you for your patience, and we will take an extra 30 minutes from all of you, but it was fruitful, and we will work with them.
Good. Thanks for the support.
So it's